Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 10 of the Cancer Researcher podcast, brought to you by the European Association for Cancer Research. In this episode, we are going to continue the conversation started in the previous episode about women in science. I am your host, Dr. Alexandra Bojtor, Scientific Officer at the EACR. And just as a reminder, my guests for this episode are Dr. Joanna Joyce, Professor at the University of Lausanne, Switzerland, Dr. Marisol Soengas, Group Leader at the Spanish National Cancer Research Center in Madrid, and one of our board members, and Dr. Mireia Crispin Ortuzar, Assistant Professor at the University of Cambridge in the UK. Marisol and Joanna are both recipients of the Pet Scholar Marina Larcher-Fogazzaro EACR Women in Cancer Research Award. This award celebrates a cancer researcher who has demonstrated academic excellence and achievements in the field of cancer research and who has, through leadership or by example, furthered the advancement of women in cancer research. To find out more about this award, please visit the funding and awards section of the EACR website. Hello, everyone, and welcome back on the Cancer Researcher podcast. I'm so grateful to be able to continue this wonderful conversation about women in cancer research with our guests, Marisol, Johanna, and Mireia.
Hello, very nice to be here.
Yes, thank you for the initiative.
I would like to pick up the conversation from where we left off. Marisol, in the last episode, when we were discussing about the glass ceiling and that perhaps women have less opportunities to be embraced in top leadership positions, such as directors of institutes, for instance, you said that something has to be done or can be done to promote the career progression of women in science. Did you have something in particular in mind?
So I think it's quite important that many grant funding agencies now are requesting kind of women in science offices or some kind of policies in place at the institutes. And I think, of course, some of these offices are created to fill a form, right? But some are taking care of, So reflecting on, for example, active policies for hiring, right? I think it's clear that because women tend to be, I'm not going to say insecure, but they need to feel that they are super qualified to put themselves forward. So these active policies to first thing, make sure that women are called or that you have enough CVs to evaluate in looking for, openings, job openings, that we have enough women put forward at conferences, not just to give a talk, but as as chairs, right? So I always talk about this concept that you have mentorship, and it's very important, mentoring men and mentoring women. But I think we need to go to the concept of a sponsorship. Sponsorship is an active, action to find women, to promote women, of course, and then the CVs will be there and the best people should be hired. This is no doubt. But I think there is still things that we can do in at the level of the institution and also at the level of scientific policy. I think this is what we have to request, that centers that don't have women in science or some kind of diversity policies in place, they should have that. And that hopefully slowly will help.
Yeah, maybe that's something in the UK, the Athena Swan Charter, right? It's now been adopted around the world. What's your feeling about how effective that has been in terms of this exact point, right? That then funding is tied to where institutes sit with regards to their gender diversity. And I think that's a really active measure, rather than saying, yes, we need to have more women. If it's tied to funding, then people will respond.
Definitely.
Yeah, so I completely agree with the idea. And I've seen this done Also in conferences, for example, for, you know, when you have a conference call, you have to send in an application. And a lot of places now require that you also have a specific named person who's going to ensure that there's a whole diversity strategy laid out, and then you have to describe it, etc. And the funding is conditional on that. So I think I completely agree with the idea. With regards to Athena Suon or other similar programs, I think the issue has been sometimes, so they're great as a starting point, but there's a challenge there in that they're plans, they're not achievements. And so you can get an Athena Suon award level for something that you've said you're going to do, and then in the future you might lose it if you haven't actually done it, but you enjoy it for a number of years without actually having necessarily achieved what you said you were going to do. So I think it's a great starting point, and it's a scheme that has achieved a lot. I think it's really important that we require well-defined achievements, and we should think about what those metrics should be. But we need to be able to demonstrate, well, first of all, progress. You need to make sure that you're moving forward. And secondly, that you're achieving certain goals. It can't be just plans, I think, because it's very easy to come up with ideas, but if you don't have any way of measuring it, and I like what you said earlier, John, about like us being scientists, if you can't demonstrate the impact of what you've done, and luckily in this area of our work, impact is actually really visible. It's not like in some other areas of research where we're like striving to show really what impact means. In this, it should be relatively straightforward to show the impact in terms of how the female members of staff have been positively impacted by these policies. I think it should be a requirement to ask for those as well.
Absolutely. I would definitely agree with that. I think that's, metrics is so important, right? Because again, back to what we were saying before, there's so much blah, blah about these types of initiatives. And then if there's no metrics to back up or to find out whether any particular intervention had an impact or not. Either way, it's important to get that data. So again, something that we do here at the University of Lausanne is that you can go onto our websites and you can find all of the statistics, all of the information for the gender proportions, for example, at each different stage. And then you can see with the interventions that we are putting into place or have put into place, if they've had a tangible impact. So I think more universities, more institutes need to, or maybe have to be forced to be public with those statistics, because then we'll actually know if things are changing in a meaningful way or not. And again, tying that, it's very straightforward to tie that to grant funding. If you're below a certain proportion in terms of any diversity metric, that should have a tangible impact on the core funding for that university, for that institute. Not to the individuals, that's not fair, but the core funding.
Yeah. So I think this is happening, because this is this European seal for human resources that includes diversity, that includes different aspects of mentoring, different aspects of career development. So this is at least in our institute, so in others, but this in Spain, but it's also at the European level. And I think these institutes that have this seal, at least from a funding perspective, that will be, favored. And in the end, so the metrics, when they have associated some kind of grant funding, this is probably the easiest or best or one of the fastest ways to go. But yeah, I think there are very many agencies that are kind of very, and also in the US as well. So people becoming very aware of having actually this need of follow-up.
So just to highlight one of the latest SHE figures, which I've referenced earlier as well, shows that women are less successful than men in accessing research funding, more exactly 3.9% less successful. So I think that's the main reason why it's important to to tie this into funding applications as well. Is this what you are trying to say?
I'm not sure about those figures because I think it perhaps depends on the country and depends on the funding scheme. So just to maybe start with an example of Switzerland. So the Swiss National Science Foundation really loves to run these surveys and collect a lot of data to see if these types of concerns are valid or not. So they actually just published one. It was for the stage of applying for your first independent grant as a PI. And there was no difference in the success rate between men and women. And they also did a study maybe a year before that, looking at the Swiss equivalent of the ERC advanced grant. And there they found that the funding rate was also equivalent. And if anything, it was perhaps higher, the success rate for women versus men. The recent ERC calls, the numbers from those, again, have shown across all, you know, all stages, starting consolidator advanced, at least in recent years, the success rates for women and men are equivalent. And again, in some cases, maybe higher for women. So I think it really depends on the funding agency in question as to whether that's the case. And of course, these numbers will fluctuate from year to year. But I would see this more positively. I think that the question, and I think that's something that we touched on earlier, the success rates are similar, but there are less women overall applying to those calls. And that's another challenge. And maybe that's something that we could now think about ways to overcome that.
Yes, this is definitely, I mean, I agree with that. So in terms of success of this high impact grants, and you mentioned the ERC, you mentioned your analysis at the Swiss level. So also here in Spain, we have the Spanish Association for Cancer Research. We have also looked into this. And definitely for this individual grants, the rates of success is the same. And the thing, as you said, we apply less, so it's less women applying. Where there is a difference is in collaborative grants. And they're so just large grants. And it's very typical that the leaders, so the main PI of these large collaborative grants are men. And then women get called to participate in, and actually sometimes get called because you need to fill up a quota, which is pretty upsetting. But anyway, so but the thing is, so why then we have to reflect in not only that we don't apply to individual grants, but this high collaborative and competitive grants, there is what we need to actually make a difference. And we can talk about examples that where this has helped. And I remember one is the Melanoma Research Alliance. I work in melanoma. And so there is a large funding agency, and they realized this, that typically the grants were like, you know, the big grants, huh? The collaborative PIs by some men principal investigators. And then they had a call, and this was Women in Science Team Awards, they call it like that. And the year after, so if the 1 year they had, I don't know, 20% of women applying, these were like 60%. So women are there. So we are few, but and we are there. We have people highly accomplished, but somehow you just call somebody to be somebody's grant as opposed to run your own large one. So that is something that we need to help. How do you help this actively, I think? So first thing, promoting, calling other women. And then I think it's true that these grants are sometimes very criticized. The grants for women, they're not grants for women. They are grants that you have to demonstrate that you are competitive. Okay. And once you're competitive, you have a slot reserved for these team, women-led teams. And this has helped. And the following year, so there were more women applying.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Maybe one other thing to consider is, you know, we know this for these large grants that you mentioned, Marisol, but we also know it, for example, for prizes, right? That women are just, you know, not being nominated at the level that men are. So perhaps to consider then is in such a large consortium like this, right? You have two co-leaders and you have to have a woman and a man. And then that way, you will, by definition, ensure that there is gender equality this is something to consider. Marisol, you're looking a bit skeptical about
no,
that.
No, I mean, I think they should be active. So, you know, there is always the backfire of this, you know, particularly from our colleagues, male colleagues, that they feel, oh, win grants for women, and now you are lucky on that. And I always said these calls need to be put, I mean, consider that. So you have to get to a certain level of course, the quality, the impact, this has to be there. But then at that level, so to also then reserve, so, you know, some number of grants for women. And having call leaders, yeah, that's one option as well. But yes, I think it's very typical that men criticize this, most men than women, I think, and that we have to fight for. Mm-hmm.
So if I can add to this, so with regards to the statistic that we started the discussion with, I would also say that I don't think we see it in the UK either for the funding schemes that are UK specific. Thinking of CRUK, for example, they published their diversity report recently, and it showed that there was no statistical difference between the success rates for women and men. If you look at individual awards, in some of them it's a bit higher, and some of them is a bit lower. But basically, like, if you know, it's not there isn't anything like a trend in the results. So the CRUK, sorry, is the Cancer Research UK charity, which, you know, funds a lot of the research that happens in cancer in the UK. And then with regards to the having a man and a woman, I tend to like that type of scheme. I completely agree with Marisol that it might backfire potentially. So all of these strategies need to be carefully thought out. But actually, we have a similar thing in our cancer centre here in Cambridge. Applies to a completely different type of challenge, which is a challenge of clinical versus non-clinical researchers. Mm-hmm. So we have our cancer centre has a series of programmes and institutes, and every programme has to have a clinical lead and a non-clinical lead. And that has helped hugely, because we also have this issue sometimes with these two communities that, you know, a lot of time, you know, the clinical voice can be very strong, and the non-clinical, particularly, you know, the computational researchers are seen as, you know, maybe not as important in some of these discussions. And so having two always as co-leads has been hugely beneficial with this challenge. And I can see something like that working applied to this as well. The other thing I would say is, we were talking about like women not applying enough. And I think, I mean, we know that this is an issue beyond science, you know, beyond cancer, beyond STEM. This is an issue for women globally. And it's a quote I like that says something like, women are promoted for their achievements, and men are promoted for their potential. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true of a lot of the things that we're discussing here as well. You can tell, you know, as a man, and I really don't want to generalize, but you know, some men can tell very good stories, can tell themselves really well, and they will get the award for that story they've been able to tell. And you know, I'm not saying that they won't get there, but it's that skill that perhaps hasn't been developed well enough in many women. And so if we're discussing strategies, I think in ensuring that women are able to overcome that imposter syndrome that I think most of us have, but many men have it as well. And it's about how do you get over that and still, you know, be there and present yourself and tell that story and just go for it. And that requires training. It requires someone who's telling you how to get there. And maybe in some communities it happens more naturally, because traditionally, you know, there's been that, you know, way of doing things, and people will support each other in that way, and it just happens. And maybe in other groups it's something that needs to be done actively, and I think that training programs around that would be really effective.
Yeah, I think maybe coming back to something Marisol mentioned earlier, right, the sponsorship idea. Yes. Right. That you basically, and this can apply to, you know, for women, or it can apply, you know, in your case, Maria, you are, you know, a sector of being a physicist, now a computational cancer researcher, right? You know, that each of us can both benefit from and contribute to helping people along. And I think that help it doesn't even necessarily need to be formalized. It's about finding people that want to help you, right? And I think many, many people really love to help, particularly, you know, younger people coming up looking for advice. And again, this doesn't have to only apply to women. It's for men too. I think all of us mentor at least as many men, young researchers, as women. But this is really important. And that's kind of an aspect that maybe is overlooked, or maybe young people feel, how am I going to go and ask this person to be my mentor? Well, you don't have to like say it like that. Find a way to have basically a mentoring team, right? Different people that will help you for different things, or sounding boards that you can go to for advice. But I really see the importance particularly for young women in cancer research, of being part of that type of a network. Because if you're known then to those of us who are organizing conferences or forming a research network, that's going to tremendously help you, particularly in the early stages, as you're working to establish yourself as a new PI, or as you're thinking about whether that's something that you want to do or not. So I think that mentoring networks are another area where we can really have a huge impact. And that impact, what I like about it, is that it continuously feeds forward, right? So all those people who are part of that mentoring network, they then mentor younger versions of themselves, not to tell them what to do. We don't want to do that. But we want to be basically, a sounding board, to listen to people, to help them, advocate for them, sponsor them, mentor them in different ways. And I think that people that can tap into that can do very well.
Yes, I agree very much. So we talk about two things. One is sponsorship, when you are in a position to really help others, and then the mentoring. So ASAICAS, of the Spanish Association for Cancer Research, is the equivalent of EACR, but in Spain. So we pay a lot of attention to this. And so we have two types of mentoring programs. We have the one-on-one, and the one-on-one is like, okay, so we pair PhDs with postdocs with senior people, and senior people like with higher level people. But then we have the peer mentoring. And the peer mentoring is working very well for early PIs. So these are early PIs, so, you know, people that are in a similar situation, they're applying for the first grants, and they talking with their, you know, friends, it helps a lot, because they're going through the same, pretty much the same stage. They have a bit more time than maybe very high accomplished PIs that are very busy and they may not be able to read in detail the grants. So typically these peer mentoring groups help in that, and help also with CV, tailoring the CVs to particular agencies. And one thing that we're doing in this mentoring, so the mentoring we have one-on-one, then we have the peer mentoring, and then we have another level that is more on soft skills, and these soft skills of interviewing. So some people are natural at interviews, you know, they go, they present well, but it's not the people, they need to be trained. And some women are a little bit shy. And I'm gonna say shy, we talked about imposter syndrome. You could see that. So these are skills that can be trained. So for example, at the EACR, or maybe, so this will be equivalent to what do we do in ASAICA, is to have this kind of mock interviews, and it can be, so you see some people that are interviewing well, and some people are interviewing, and so actually by seeing, you can also learn. And so maybe we can think about one of these, so how to go for an interview kind of thing, or as a course, as a workshop. And these interactive workshops, this usually is like a group, so 20, 30 people, so to be effective. But these are kind of things that maybe we could help more to put forward in the EACR, because they tend to work very well. And people by seeing it, and then the elevator pitch, you know, how few people are able to tell in 5 minutes or 3 minutes their work. And that has, this is not only men and women, but I think with women, perhaps we have to make a bit more effort so they can show their you know, not only their potential, but also their achievements. And I think, Johanna, we talked about this, and you're very much into, so in terms of working together to promote women and to promote young scientists is to involve men. We don't want this, you know, podcast or this, you know, conversation to sound that we think that women, responsible women, have to solve all our situations. This is something, actions that we have to do together. And I think, fortunately, more and more, although we have to work on this, I think our male colleagues are realizing, at least they now making themselves, and we make them more aware of problems of, you know, bias. And I think it's just to call that they are part of Women in Science actions. I think that we should try to get them also participating in Women in Science, you know, sessions at congresses, and make that the Women in Science sections and diversity sessions in general. So are a central part of our, you know, policies in our institutes, but also part of the, you know, grants and part of conferences as well.
Yeah, I think that's a really nice way to end this conversation, to talk about the importance of allies and partners, and not to pitch any group. It can be any group that, that we want to self-define with. It's not a zero-sum game. There are so many studies, both in science, but also in the corporate world, that more diverse teams do so much better. And this is also in science. The science they produce has more of an impact when you have diverse teams. So it's in everybody's best interest to promote a diverse community and to support that. And I think, you know, just to maybe close again with a personal example, we recently had a workshop for leaders at the University of Lausanne. And the title of the workshop was Leadership for Gender Equality. Mm-hmm. And of course, I went along to this workshop expecting it would be only women. It was 40% women and 60% men. And I thought that this was just the most encouraging sign. These were all full professors. We didn't have to go to this. It was our choice to learn more about how to be a leader that promotes inclusivity, diversity, equality. And so I'm really actually very optimistic about the future. I see that also, you know, with the young men, either in my lab or in the environment, at the EACR meetings. This is really a huge culture change. Much like the queen bees, there will still be some men who are sexist, and that is what it is, right? But the vast, vast majority of people want to see a scientific community, a cancer research community that reflects society at large. And I think that we are in a good direction in that respect.
I think that is a great positive and further-looking note to end our episode on. So thank you so much for agreeing to be guests on our podcast and for taking the time to discuss this pressing issue of gender imbalances in research that unfortunately reflects in cancer research as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
We really hope that you enjoyed listening to Johanna's, Marisol's and Mireia's conversation. I hope you found interesting our chat and that you enjoyed listening to their opinions on how these gender inequalities observed in the career progression in academia, in science in general, and in cancer research in particular, could be addressed. I would like to once again thank our guests for being here with me today, and many thanks to everyone who listened. Please subscribe to our podcast so you won't miss an episode. You can find The Cancer Researcher on your podcast platform of choice. We're on Spotify, Audible, Apple, Amazon, and Google Podcasts. Please do us a favor, subscribe to our podcast and tell your friends about it. And don't forget to tune in on the 17th of April for the next episode. You can give us feedback or offer suggestions for other topics or preferred guests through our feedback form which you can find on our website at www.eacr.org/podcast. That's www.eacr.org/podcast. And don't forget that you can also find us on X at EACR News, Instagram at Hello EACR, and you can search for us on Facebook and LinkedIn.